This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Stinking Truth.
We're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Odyssey Original Podcast, the Stinking Truth Podcast, covering the entire NFL. He joins us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate it. It's always good to be with you guys.
I just want to know, did you debate long before making fun of Russell Wilson's first pitch the other day on social media?
No. I mean, that's just standard operating procedure. No, absolutely not. So, anyhow, whatever. I mean, it was a pretty good throw. Like I said, that I was surprised he didn't scramble for a strike. So, especially over the middle. So, anyhow, but that's all good. That's all, that's all just in good fun and games as far as I'm concerned.
More successful, Russ's time in Denver or that first pitch?
The first pitch by far was better than anything that happened in Denver over the last 2 years. And that was, it was awful. And even last year when people are saying, oh, it's so much better and this, that, and the other, it still was, woefully inadequate compared to what you spent and what you thought you were getting. You can get that. Like there are games like you got out of a sophomore QB at Smoky Hill High School that could have done some of the things that he did. So, you just had such great expectations, and I'll admit that I had great expectations. And then I saw what we were getting, and it certainly soured. There's no question.
So I think what's funny about it is I saw the people go after you, and it's like, guys, he stunk in Denver. There's really no way to defend it, and it was a funny joke by you. I just think we've realized that you could say anything about even like the most hated person in the world, and there's going to be like five people defending that most hated person, of course, which Russ isn't. My point is, there's always somebody acting like a joke is some sort of war crime.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is that aspect of it. And then, there are a group of people out there. There are a minority of people, but they're a very loud minority. I call them the Rusties. And, the Rusties think that, he didn't do anything wrong and that Sean Payton didn't change his offense for Russ to have success. And, this guy who's, the same breath that they call Sean Payton one of the most egotistical people in the world. And, hey, listen, man, he's got an ego. There's no question about it. But the same breath that the Rusties will say he's the most egotistical person in the world would say also that he didn't change his offense to suit Russ. Like, he wanted to lose. Like, he sabotaged Russ. Like, do you understand how incongruent that is, that you would sabotage Russ when you're so egotistical? All you want to do is win? I mean, it's just stupid. And the bottom line is, I had a conversation, after the season was over with Drew Brees, and Drew Brees said to me, point blank, I didn't recognize the offense they were running. Well, wait a minute, you just operated that offense for 15 years, you didn't recognize the offense they were running? Why? Because they changed it to actually fit Russ's skill set? So, it's a lot of people that don't know anything about football that are just Russ fans. It's kind of like the Tebowites here in Denver for a while. That was just, it was mind-boggling to deal with them, and it's mind-boggling to deal with some of the people that, that think Russ has done no wrong.
So this weekend, the Browns have just six picks, two in the top 100, none in the first round. What should the expectations be for Cleveland?
When you start to talk about second-round picks and third-round picks, and those are the picks that are going to make up the majority of your roster. And to me, those are where a lot of the value lies. And the other thing is where I think the potential of less mistakes lie. So show me a team that really does well in the second, third, and fourth round, and I'll show you a team that does a great job of scouting based on film study, not based on athletic talent. And so what ends up happening to you a lot in the first round is you'll see some idiosyncrasies, you'll see some flaws, you'll see some things that you don't like, but because the guy is so athletically gifted, you talk yourself into, hey man, under our expert tutelage and coaching, we'll coach that out of him. And in my personal experience, that doesn't happen. If you're flawed as a player, athleticism doesn't make up for those flaws. And the first round oftentimes is we're going to make excuses for a player because he is so gifted athletically. And, you know, I say it all the time, football is easy for football players. It's really hard for athletes. I want football players first and foremost, athletes second. And so that to me is a great place when you're drafting later and you don't have that first round to really dive into the film study and really understand what you're trying to pick and the guys that fit what you're coaching and how you want to build your football team.
Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. So the Browns have put a lot into this wide receiver room. They've got money invested in Amari Cooper. They just traded for Jerry Jeudy, as we've talked about. They did a pick swap to get Elijah Moore here. Cedric Tillman's here, the third-round pick last year. Should that preclude the Browns from taking a wide receiver at 54?
Yes.
Why?
I look at the wide receiver position, and I know we've been duped into believing that wide receivers, you know, are the reason football teams win. And it has, you know, to me, it has very little to do with it in an organization or in a league that is a dependent league. You know, 10 guys have to do their job exceptionally well for a wide receiver to sniff a football. And so I don't understand why we've put so much value on the position other than, I mean, I understand that, you know, the league is about throwing the football and all the rules are bent toward throwing the football. But, you know, I'm a big line of scrimmage guy, obviously, offensive lines, defensive lines, run the football, do those things to take the pressure off your quarterback, to take the pressure off the passing game. And, you know, the last guy to to win a Super Bowl that led the league in receiving, that led the league in yardage, that led the league in, you know, touchdowns, whatever, was Cooper Kupp. The guy who did it before that was in 1988, it was Jerry Rice. So, like you know, we sit there and make a big deal out of, you know, the wide receiver position, and I frankly think it's a bit overvalued. And we've seen, you know, what happened in Kansas City. They've won back-to-back Super Bowls, and they've gotten decimated in their wide receiver room. Guess what? They've got a quarterback that can make it happen. They adjusted with their tight end in the middle of the football field. They ran the ball a lot better, and they still were able to win a championship with you know, no wide receiver other than Rashee Rice really, really making many plays for them.
Mark, the news came down yesterday that the Broncos had traded for Zach Wilson. I know people are making fun of this trade, and Zach hasn't been great in New York. I mean, I look at what they gave up, and you know, for a guy who's got some talent, maybe a new, you know, a change of scenery could help the kid. Do you like it, love it, hate it?
Oh, I love it. I think it's great because it doesn't cost you anything.
Right.
And frankly, I'm telling you, you go back to 2021, that kid athletically, you know, arm talent and athletically is as gifted as anybody, probably more gifted than just about anybody in this draft. And so, you know, you've got benefit of that. Now, it doesn't cost you anything. And then you hope that, you know, he's grown from a maturity standpoint. And then, you know, you've got to basically probably untrain some of the things he's been trained. But I'll give you, for instance, you know, Sam Darnold takes a beating. Now he's on his fourth team after a year of football rehab in San Francisco. And I'm talking to Kyle Shanahan because I did the last two San Francisco games just about, you know, that kind of journey for Sam Darnold. And he goes, listen, Stink, he goes, he was drafted by the Jets. And at that point in time, they had hired Jeremy Bates, who was an assistant with Denver under, you know, the regime that had Peyton Manning. So Jeremy comes into the Jets and tries to install the Peyton Manning offense. Kyle looked at me and goes, there's one guy in the world that can run the Peyton Manning offense, and that's Peyton Manning. And now you're asking a rookie to be in complete and total control at the line of scrimmage of everything we're doing. Impossible. Then he gets traded to the Carolina Panthers under Matt Rhule, which was a real collegiate offense. And there was no progression passing in that offense to speak of. So the first time he learned progression passing in the NFL was in his fourth year after Matt Rhule got fired. So you tell me, like, is it his fault or is it bad coaching? I think there's a lot of people in this, a lot of people that cover the NFL, a lot of people in the league that think NFL coaching is just because you're in the NFL, it's great. There is a lot of piss-poor coaching in the National Football League, I guarantee you. And there's a lot of really bad, you know, teachers in the National Football League. And a lot of what kind of success you're going to have has to do with where you get drafted and who is actually coaching you. And I always think, you know, I'm blessed. My own career, I had Joe Bugel, who, you know, in my estimation is a Hall of Fame offensive line coach. I had Jim Hanifin, same thing. And I had Alex Gibbs, three legends in the National Football League when it comes to coaching offensive line. So I was coached exceptionally well. There's a lot of kids that don't get coached well at all, and their careers end up being a bust simply because of where they got drafted and who was trying to teach them.
Mark, given what you're saying, people have used that 2021 class with Wilson and Trey Lance and Mac Jones and Justin Fields. Four of the five quarterbacks that were drafted in the top 16 have new zip codes this offseason. Or in the last 12 months, the only guy that hasn't been dealt or given up on is Trevor Lawrence. People have pointed that and said the NFL has a quarterback problem. Do you agree that the NFL has a quarterback problem?
Well, sure, but the NFL doesn't invest in anything, right? They let college coach, you know, college. And to no fault of their own, the college game doesn't even, it's not even close to what you do in the NFL. I'll tell you, the reason J.J. McCarthy is shooting up draft boards is because he actually operates an offense that has a progression passing game that gets into 12 personnel, 21 personnel, 22 personnel. It gets into changing formations and shifting and motioning and actually calling plays. You know, instead of looking at the sideline and going, hey, you know, red barn rooster chicken, that's what we're running. You actually have to get in there and be able to call a play and be able to understand what that play is. And that's why he's shooting up draft boards. The other thing about college football is it's static formations. It's 2x2s, 3x1s, 3x2 formations, right? And it's pick out the best matchup you've got. And if that guy doesn't come open, pull the ball and run around and scramble and make a throw. I mean, it's a very simplified. As a matter of fact, I was talking to an offensive coordinator in college that used to be an offensive coordinator in the National Football League. And I said, how much of your playbook is pared down to make sure that it fits what you do in college? He goes, oh, over 50%. We run 50% plus less in the college game than we run in the professional game. So, it's not a shock to me that 75% of the guys aren't worth a squirt of piss when they get in the National Football League because they're not ready. They're not coached. They're not taught. And the game is different. The game is played. The base formation in college is four wides. When you ever get in four wides in the NFL? Never 2 minute, you know. Hey, we're throwing a Hail Mary. You just don't. So college football is a 7-on-7 game. The NFL isn't built that way. You know, the hash marks make it different. Everything is different. So it's really hard to evaluate these college quarterbacks, and it doesn't surprise me that 75% of them fail.
So what's the fix, or is there a quick fix?
Well, I think one of the things that the NFL needs to do, and, you know, they don't listen to me, and I've had this conversation with Roger Goodell. You need to invest in if it's the UFL, whatever it is, you need to invest in that. So kids that come out of college, especially offensive linemen and quarterbacks, can actually work on their craft. There needs to be an investment because you're certainly not, doing it because, hey, college provides, you know, its own feeder league, right? But that college offense is nothing like what happens in the NFL for the most part. But the NFL is they're making money hand over fist. And hey, even as the game deteriorates, guess what? The numbers continue to go up. People continue to watch. So what would the NFL care? Like, why would we invest any of the money that we're making hand over fist to fix the game? Because, you know, we're all addicted. I always say it's like selling crack to crack addicts, you know? I mean, we cannot get enough of NFL football, no matter how crappy it gets. We're still locked in. And so they're Teflon. Why would they invest any money to fix it?
Mark, the Broncos need a quarterback. They do not have a top three pick this year, but there have been whispers that they could trade into that third pick. If you could have any one of the quarterbacks not named Caleb Williams on this roster, is there one you prefer, or do you feel safe with any of those quarterbacks?
No, I would never feel safe with every one of the quarterbacks. I mean, I think Drake May is like inaccurate underneath. Like, I think the way we evaluate quarterbacks, we evaluate big plays. We watch a big play over the top, and we're like, oh, my gosh. You know, he threw a post to an area, and the guy ran underneath it, and what a great throw. Unbelievable. Who cares? Like, how many times do you do that a game? How many times does that happen for you a game? Like, I want the boring. I want to see completions. I want to see you execute an offense. I want to see you throw, you know, a stick route that's open. I want to see you throw the drag curl, the flat curl. I want to, like Drake May was woefully inaccurate underneath in the passing game, the intermediate to shallow passing game. Like, that's where you make money. I want to see boring, because that's what ends up winning. Hey, give me a second and five consistently, and we're going to win a lot of football games. But, you know, we just tend to look at the big throws. Oh, look how athletic he is. He scrambled around, whoop-de-doo. I don't care. So the one guy, to answer your question, I wouldn't trade up for any of them. There's not one of them I would trade up for. But if I was forced to trade up, I would probably trade up for J.J. McCarthy, because I think he's the only guy in this draft in that top tier six quarterbacks that actually operated an offense that looked similar to what you're going to get in the NFL.
Hey, real quick, Mark, about 30 seconds here. Do you know who the Red Panda is? She performs at basketball games.
And have you seen her work?
Yes. Yeah, on the really tall unicycle.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So she was in Cleveland last night, and I was at the game. She performed at halftime. Everyone's raving about this. Is she overrated?
Well, not in the kicking bowls over your head and catching them on top of your head game.
It's a very specific niche.
She's the best in the business when it comes to that. I mean, if that's your thing, then yes, she is as good as it gets. That happens to not be my thing. So, like, I don't give a rip. But, you know, good for her. She has got, like you said, a very specific skill that, I don't know how
it's like
you
Liam
get
Neeson
into,
and Taken.
Right. I guess. Yes, exactly. I don't know how you get into that skill set, but she might be one of one. She may be the only person that has that skill.
Mark, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you. Enjoy the draft. Enjoy the other NFL Super Bowl.
All right. You guys take care.
Thanks so much. Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Odyssey Original Podcast, The Stinkin' Truth Podcast, covering the entire NFL. Make sure to follow The Stinkin' Truth Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.